Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
The countries that protect religious freedom are those who provide the best treatment to minorities and the most vulnerable among us.
God never says anything about you being happy. That's not the goal of life. And that's shocking, frankly, to a lot of people, even a lot of Christians. They're shocked to hear that God doesn't care if they're happy because they're convinced that's the whole goal of life, isn't it?
The resurrection of Christ means that the roof has been blown off and the heavens are not made of brass. God became man, and this man brings not merely life over death, but he brings abundant life in the here and now.
The gift of private confession and absolution, that is specifically there for those kind of moments where you are feeling the power of your sin and it's really bugging you.
The youth of Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Carlisle, Iowa, love listening to Issues Etc. on their way to higher things.
Dare you Lutheran!
How often have you heard these claims that sexual orientation is difficult to define scientifically? People are born gay. Attempt to change sexual orientation is harmful, or that it can't be changed at all, and that the mental illness, the health issues that LGBTQ people suffer are because society discriminates against them. You've heard them often, haven't you? Are they true? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, July the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be dealing with some of those gay myths with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute. Jay Sonstrom joins us for the conclusion of our two-part series on the failures of scientism. We'll discuss moralistic therapeutic deism with Dr. Joel Bierman of Concordia Seminary. And then Pastor Jonathan Connor will begin a new series with his Kids Have Questions. We'll talk about their questions regarding the afterlife. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including the new ebook, Protecting Your Family from the Top 5 Gay Myths. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Why do these claims exist in the first place? Why is there so much attempted deception about homosexuality?
That is a very interesting question. You could understand that people themselves who regard themselves as exclusively and permanently homosexual might want people to believe these things, but what's interesting is how many other people seem to believe it. And a lot of it is that homosexuality has become one of the, I don't want to say linchpins, but it's become an important platform of the whole of the sexual revolution. And since people are committed to the sexual revolution for reasons of their own, sometimes people will go to bat to defend other planks of it besides the ones that immediately and personally affect them. So it's a confluence of those factors, I would say, Todd.
What do you think is the biggest myth?
Well, kind of the granddaddy of all the myths about homosexuality is that sexual orientation is an innate, immutable trait. And the reason that's so important is that it mirrors in various ways the language of the Supreme Court. If a trait like race is an inborn, immutable, unchangeable characteristic, the person has no control over it, then different standards apply to discrimination on the basis of that kind of trait. In fact, you're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of a trait like that, right? Basically, what the gay lobby and their allies throughout the sexual revolution want to do is to make it appear that gay is the new black, that being gay is just like being black, so that the whole anti-discrimination apparatus that has been created in the legal sector can all be brought to bear to protect the trait of being gay. But the trait of being gay, if you stop and analyze it, it's not anything like the trait of having black skin. The trait of being gay is a whole complex of thoughts, feelings, actions, commitments, as well as the sexual attractions and feelings themselves. So it'd be astonishing, actually, if something that complicated could be reduced to an inborn genetic trait. But that's what they want people to believe. And the reason is they want the power of the anti-discrimination law to protect not just the trait, but all of the behaviors that come along with it.
How do you respond to the claim that sexual orientation can be easily and scientifically defined?
Well, do you know what, Todd? People very seldom actually state that as a bold claim the way you just did there. But they act as if it's true, right? They act as if when you say the word sexual orientation, everybody knows exactly what you mean. And you get 10 scientists in the room and they'd all say the same thing. But the fact is, when you look at it more closely, you find out that it's a complex of factors. And some of those factors are more immutable than others. Some of those factors are different for men than they are for women. And so when people go to measure sexual orientation, that's why you'll come up with different measures, right? Because the most common measures would be, how do you feel? Do you feel same-sex attracted? Are you attracted principally to people of the same sex? Have you ever had relations with a person of the same sex? Have you had relations with the opposite sex exclusively? That is, you've never had a partner of the opposite sex. And how do you identify yourself? See, so all of these things, thoughts, feelings, fantasy, behavior, self-identification, all of that is part of the package. And it varies from person to person. And interestingly enough, we've known that at least since the 1990s, when a very big study was done by the University of Chicago, trying to deal with the outrageous claims that Alfred Kinsey was making. And of course, they discovered that Kinsey was not accurate and not telling the whole truth and so on and so forth. And they specifically wanted to check his claim that 10% of the population is gay. Well, under no measurement at that time that they were using, under no measurement was there anything like 10% of the population showing up as gay. But in the process of trying to do that, what they showed was there were a bunch of different ways you could measure that question, and they overlap and produce different results. So that's why it's, scientifically speaking, a complicated question.
It's related to another one, which is that people are born that way. They're born either gay or straight.
But the idea that people are born that way is an important aspect of the whole innate immutable trait. See, so if you can convince people that they're born in that way, that does a number of things for you. Number one, it makes it more like being black. It makes gay more like black, which we've already mentioned. But the other thing it does is that if you're a young person and you are experiencing feelings of same-sex attraction, somebody comes along and says to you, you were born that way. There's no point in trying to change or resist those feelings. Best thing for you to do is to indulge those feelings, act on those feelings, come out and be your true self. The idea that you were literally born that way kind of disarms any kind of different narrative about those feelings and the meaning of those feelings. And so that idea that people are born that way performs a number of important ideological functions for the gay lobby.
Another one that I have heard is that, and it's again related to this kind of immutable characteristic, no one can change his or her sexual orientation. Although that seems to be being undermined pretty steadily by people who can change not their sexual orientation, but claim to change their sex altogether.
Yeah, well, you would think that one would see that those two things are contradictory, right? That we're saying that your sexual orientation, whether you're attracted to a person of the same sex or the opposite sex, that is an immutable trait. Nobody can change it. But the sex of the body itself is fluid, and you can change that anytime you want. That is completely illogical because sexual orientation itself presumes sex. It presumes the sex of the body. You're saying you are attracted to this person because of the particular sex that they are. So yeah, you would think that that would be an obvious self-contradiction, but the people who hold those two views in common at the same time, Todd, you and I, and probably most of your listeners listen to that and think, what in the heck? How can you possibly think that? Here's what is really behind both of those thoughts. What they're really feeling, saying, claiming, however you want to put it, is that the sex of the body is not particularly significant. The sex of the body is something which can be altered at will. We can change not only our sex roles, our gender roles, or we don't all have to be sexually stereotyped, etc., but we can change the sex of the body itself. And nothing bad will happen. We can do as much social engineering, as much technical engineering to the body as we want, and it'll all be fine. And that's a way of saying that the sex of the body is not significant in any social, physical, or dare we say it, metaphysical way.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is our guest. We're talking about gay myths on this Friday, July the 21st. She's founder and president of the Ruth Institute. On the other side, do those myths run up against the transgender movement to the degree that maybe either the myths or the transgender movement must give way. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
You wish your classical school could do more for struggling learners, uncertain where to begin? The Memoria Press Schools Division includes Cheryl Swope, author of Simply Classical, A Beautiful Education for Any Child. The Schools Division will happily assist your school. Memoria Press offers an entire line of special needs resources for teaching math, reading, spelling, and more. Contact schools at memoriapress.com or order directly from simplyclassical.com with coupon code LPR23.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly seat us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is our guest. We're discussing some gay myths. Jennifer, before the break, we noticed that, at least within the LGBTQ movement broadly, there are claims being made that are just logically contradictory with one another. Some in the gay, lesbian, and bisexual community have noticed it and have tried to distance themselves from the transgender movement. Which one gives way?
Well, this is a very interesting point that you're making here, which is that this is a coalition of people who we now refer to them as sexual minorities as a collectivity. So you've got men who tell you that their defining characteristic is that they can't respond sexually to a woman. You've got women who tell you that their defining characteristic is that they can't respond sexually to a man. And then you've got people who are one sex and say they're the other. Okay, so this, it's kind of an unlikely bunch of people when you really get down to it. And what we're finding is that among the L's and the T's are in open warfare, okay? The lesbians and the trans people are in open warfare. And among, I would say, the subset of lesbians who are most offended and outraged, really, by the transgender movement are the women who take the body seriously, who think that being a woman is something and that it's not all a social construct. The kind of person who thinks everything's a social construct, well, they're ready to construct and reconstruct and deconstruct all day long. But the kind of woman, the kind of feminist, the kind of lesbian who thinks that the body is something substantial, they are outraged at the fact that there are men who have been convicted of rape who suddenly discover that they're really a woman, and then they get housed in a woman's prison. If you can imagine a greater nightmare than that, to be literally housed with an opportunistic predator who's claiming he's female, I can't think of anything more horrifying. And yet that's happened in the UK. It's happened in the United States. And that's where the transgender ideology takes you. So it's very interesting to watch this whole drama playing out. And I think it's very important for Christians to take their place in the conversation and the discussion that what this is about is the truth of the body.
One of the myths that's found its way in some states into actual laws is the myth that any attempt to change sexual orientation is inevitably harmful.
Yes, yes. And it hasn't found its way into the law. It has been pushed there. It has been placed there. It has been actively campaigned for by members of the gay lobby. Interestingly enough, using the testimony of a man called Sam Brinton, who claims that he was tortured in what he calls conversion therapy. But when you go and you check his testimony, what you find out is that the man, he can never give you the details of where he went, the name of the therapist, anything like that. And we actually had a speech from a person who specializes in detecting deception in court cases and things like that. And she and her colleagues reviewed Sam Brinton's speeches and came to the conclusion that the man is highly deceptive, judging by his body language, choice of words, voice tremors, that sort of physical evidence that the man's not telling the truth. But the reason these therapy bans are so important to the gay lobby, in my opinion, is that these therapy bans are basically blocking the exits. Anybody who wants to exit the gay lifestyle, they're making it as hard as possible for that person to do so. And when you think about some of the trauma that people have been through, we know, everybody knows, that the rates of childhood abuse among people who self-identify as gay or lesbian or trans, their rates of having experienced childhood sexual abuse, much higher than other people. You might imagine that there would be some connection between childhood trauma and sexual minority status. We're not even allowed to ask that question. And the idea that a gay man could go into his therapist and say, you know, it was awful what happened to me, and I don't know what this all means, and I don't know why my attractions are so persistent, but I really want to talk about this, sort it out. They don't want that to happen, you know, because some of those guys are going to come to the conclusion that the trauma was a causal factor, and they don't want anybody talking about that.
At the same time, Jennifer, there are people in the LGBTQ movement opposed to so-called conversion therapy who are advocates for literally a different kind of conversion therapy, in some cases on minor children, including hormone therapy, I would say psychological manipulation, and physical surgery. How can this be?
Right. It's crazy when you look at it that way, you know, that you're not allowed to do talk therapy about sexual orientation, but you're allowed to do physical transformative medical procedures. I hesitate to even call it medicine. You're allowed to do physical transformative medical interventions to convert somebody from being a female to being a male or vice versa. And there are people who are now proposing conversion therapy bans on conversion to talk a kid out of the position that they're really trans. That's how far some of these people have gone. You know, in other words, a child comes in and says, I think I'm trans. Oh, the only thing we're allowed to do, literally, is to move you onto that medical conveyor belt. We aren't allowed to talk to you about whether that's really true. That's what it means to have a conversion therapy ban in the case of the trans issue. And there are people supporting and promoting those type of bans.
The cosmetic surgery, that's what I'd call it, the cosmetic surgery industry has been doing this long enough that there are people who are detransitioning. How are they generally received in the LGBTQ community?
Oh, that's one of the saddest things out there. First of all, a lot of times these kids are, because we're now talking about young people, right? We're not talking about men in their 50s who decide they're really women and stuff like that. We're talking about kids. Very often these kids are socially awkward, and when they transitioned, they got lots and lots of love bombs from all their friends, you know, who now congratulate them on how brave they are and how, isn't it great, you're part of our group now. This is part of what's happening with the large numbers, the large percentage, relatively large percentages of kids on the autism spectrum who have decided that they're trans. They're finding social acceptance within that community. But when somebody decides that that's not really who they are and they want to walk away from it, or they decide, I want my body back, or like Chloe Cole, she says, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to nurse a baby. I wonder if I can even have a baby. When they start talking like that, that whole group of friends goes away. And not only that, one of the saddest things is that they find it difficult to get medical help to manage the medical problems that they have associated with the detransition and associated with whatever, you know, some of the problems that they may have had from the original surgery itself. So it really is a door that swings one way. It's a door that only opens one direction.
What's the biggest rookie error to avoid when you talk about these myths with about a minute here?
Yes, so this ebook that we've created, which you can get at the Ruth Institute website, we list out these myths that we've been talking about, and at the end, we put rookie errors when you talk about the myths. And the very first one is to avoid the terms gay, lesbian, or LGBT as if they were traits of the person. So you can talk about somebody who describes themselves as gay, but don't say, this is a gay person. No, this is a man who says he's gay, who has persistent same-sex attraction. It's some other kind of language, but do not pin that label on them as if that were a permanent feature of who they are. If you could do that, that would help people a lot, I think.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities. She's senior research fellow in economics for the Acton Institute and author of several books, including the new ebook, Protecting Your Family from the Top 5 Gay Myths. You can receive this ebook for free at ruthinstitute.org and look for Protecting Your Family from the Top 5 Gay Myths, ruthinstitute.org. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, we're going to conclude our two-part series on the failures of scientism. Jay Sonstrom will be our guest, author of the book Loving Science But Not the Empire.
Register today. The 2023 Lutherans for Life National Conference is October 11th through the 13th at the Holiday Inn Cincinnati Airport in Erlanger, Kentucky. The conference includes visits to the Ark Encounter and Creation Museum. Online registration is open now with early bird pricing at lutheransforlife.org/conference. Lutherans for Life, equipping Lutherans and their neighbors to be gospel-motivated voices for life. lutheransforlife.org.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, freedom, vocation, Concordia University, Chicago, cuchicago.edu.